Welcome to Targeted, True Crime, Domestic Violence. We tell stories of those who were targeted by domestic abuse and investigate cases of family violence, using academic research to interpret the events. As a college professor, I think we need to stop making family violence a secret. It's time to tell our stories, use our experiences to help, heal, and provoke change. Targeted discusses sensitive information about abuse. Details may be graphic, and listener discretion is advised. I'm Mo Blackwell, the host of Targeted. Hello, my friends. I've been combing through oodles of questions, and today I've got answers. Not all of the answers. I didn't end up including all of the questions because there are so many, just the ones that I thought would be of interest to the most people. The first part of our episode will be me answering your questions, and stay tuned for an announcement about season 4 at the end of the podcast today. So let's just dive right into it. Our first question comes from Caledonna. She asks, what is your number one tip? I'm going to assume that she's asking about my number one tip for someone who's in a violent relationship. Get help. Your local shelters or YWCA are excellent resources. They may be able to help you in lots of ways that you never even realized. You can call them about a lot more than simply if you're looking for emergency housing. The staff at a shelter often work with law enforcement or social services. They work with doctors, churches, counselors, and, say, apartment managers. They work with all these people on a regular basis. And because of that, they might be able to recommend which person you should talk to at a particular agency in order to get more traction. You're not alone, really. Get help. The second question comes from TK. TK asks, do you worry that one of the POSs will ever come after you? Okay, I think POS means piece of shit. Yeah, it is a concern, frankly. I have a fairly locked down social media profile, and I don't think you'll find a lot of information about me, my home address, my phone number online. I try to be pretty conservative. Because frankly, I don't want to have a violent person coming after me because they're mad that the survivor was untargeted. The third question was submitted anonymously. How do you find people for your show? Most of the people who have been on my show have contacted me first and will communicate a few times before deciding to record any of the episodes. So the answer is most of the time people come to me and asked to be on the show. I hadn't anticipated that this would happen. It took me by surprise, but I think it's worked out really well. And you listeners, you have really responded so positively to the people who have shared their stories. So thank you for that. There are a couple outliers, though, a couple times when people who were on the show didn't come to me. For instance, in one episode, I knew the survivor, and I learned about her assault in a blog she had posted, in which she was talking about her experience, and she was aiming to educate about acquaintance rape. So I asked her if she would be open to interviewing for the podcast, and she was. The other was with season 3 miniseries about Josh Osborne. Originally, one of his cousins wrote to me and asked me to cover Josh's case. I didn't want to do this without family permission, so I contacted Josh's sisters and asked them if they would be open to talking about him, and they agreed. Originally, I thought it would just be them discussing their brother, but I quickly learned that they were abused too, and they were ready to share about their experiences. For season 4, I am also asking the family about covering a particular person's story. Question 4 comes from Jessica.
Have you turned down people who wanted to be on the show?
Okay, well, yeah, a few people have decided not to record after we had discussed it a bit. I want to make sure that people are ready to tell their story. And after we talked about it a bit, a few people decided not to. I suppose I would just say I encouraged them to think about it. And then they came to their own decisions. But there was one person that I gently put off and decided not to have on the show. I didn't tell this person directly. I just kept putting them off and off and off until they finally stopped asking. It wasn't a survivor, though, so don't worry. I didn't dismiss anyone who had a story to tell about themselves. It was a true crime book author. And at first, I thought he'd be a good fit for the show because he had published a true crime book about a woman who had killed her abusive husband. And supposedly, he had had a lot of interviews with her in order to write the story. He sent me the book, and after reading a few chapters, I wasn't impressed. The writing style was salacious, sensational, and I just don't think that domestic violence needs to be written about in a sexy manner. It has enough impact when told with truth or honesty. It doesn't need anything else. It's a popular enough book, though, so not everyone agrees with me. That's the one person I essentially turned down. The next question comes from Elijah.
What do you think about your older episodes?
Oh, Elijah, you see me, sir. Good Lord, this is a sticky issue for me. I stand by the content in the older episodes, and I'm thinking about season 1 in particular, because I think Melissa Gibson's case is important. And I really wanted to frame it in a way that hadn't been done before. I think I accomplished that. But the audio quality? Okay, it was bad. Really bad. Really, really, really bad. I had little idea about what I was doing technically. I have a dream that someday I may go back and re-record those episodes to improve it. But there's just not enough time at the moment. I'm thinking about taking those episodes off of the main podcast feed and putting them on the website until I can do something about re-recording. I hate that new listeners often start with the very first episode, and if they get turned off right away due to my inexperience with audio 2 years ago, that's a shame. So I might take them off, put them on the website so somebody who really wants to hear it can find it. But those wouldn't be the first episodes that a new listener would hear. Now we have a question from John. Ooh, a second man in a row asking a question. All right, he says,
are you so...
Okay, wait. Before I read it, let me warn you that I don't think John is a big fan of mine. Well, you know what? I'm not particularly fond of you either, John. Here we go.
Are you so stupid to think that a girl who was being beaten could listen to the podcast? No, she would be beaten again if he knew she listened to it.
Maybe this was worded a bit aggressively, John, but I do take your point. First, domestic violence takes on so many forms and permutations that, yeah, there probably are a lot of people, a lot of survivors, who can listen to a true crime podcast about domestic violence without being assaulted. Second, man, you got me thinking, and maybe you have a point that is rather obvious now that you've brought it up. When I first created the podcast, I guess I originally thought that all of the listeners would be people other than survivors, that this would be people needing to learn about domestic violence. I didn't realize that so many survivors would listen. And now that I think about it, having the words domestic violence in the title of the podcast, to have it be so big on the cover art, it's a little bit glaring. And I do wonder if this could be a problem for someone, because when you're listening to it on a podcast, that lock screen to have those words domestic violence right up there, that could be a problem. So after the season ends, I'm going to think a little bit more about this. Maybe I'll make a little shift for season 4 and just start calling the podcast Targeted True Crime without the subtitle Domestic Violence. I would still keep domestic violence in the search fields, and I would keep it in descriptions so that it can be found just as easily on Google or on a podcast app. But maybe it would be better not to have it so large on the cover art. I don't know for sure, but I'm thinking about it, John. I'm thinking. Here's a question about a particular episode in season 3, the story of Marie, in which there seemed to be some conflicting information in it. Here's the question.
One thing that confounded me was a statement that she could not leave abusive partner number 2 because she was barely managing financially, then later states he stole $100,000 from her. It did not make sense. I am sure there must be an explanation. Maybe others are wondering too. Is it worth clarifying?
Thank you for emailing me, Rona, and asking. Yes, there is an explanation. Basically, it's my fault. Let me pull the curtain back a little bit about episodes based on interviews and how I put them together. Then I think you'll see how this type of problem happens. First, you may think that interview episodes are really easy for a podcaster to do, because all we have to do is listen for 30 minutes to an hour, just record a little bit here or there, and call it a day. Before I got into podcasting, I thought this kind of episode would be a break for a podcaster because it wouldn't be nearly as much work because the other person is doing most of the talking. Not at all. You see, most people don't talk about their life experiences in an organized, orderly fashion. If I played an interview from beginning to end without editing, it would be a frustrating experience for listeners. I know. I've listened to many of them on other podcasts, and I grew weary of how it just didn't make sense because a person kept jumping around from topic to topic, saying every other word, and not tying together their thoughts well. Because of this, I talked with other podcasters whom I thought did a good job with interview episodes. In particular, I spoke with Marissa Jones of The Vanished. She does an excellent job with putting together the interviews. Hers was one of the first podcasts I listened to, and shout out to Marissa for discussing it with me and letting me know a bit about what she does. She edits her episodes so that there are chunks of time when the person she interviewed speaks, but she keeps those clips sharp and focused about a particular topic. She doesn't include the meandering or the backtracking. She arranges those pertinent sections together to create a compelling story. I started doing the same thing when I began conducting more interviews. Let me give you an example. For instance, let's say I'm interviewing someone, and at about 10 minutes into the interview, they're finally comfortable enough to start talking about a particular assault. At first, the person gives me just bare bones information and talks about it, maybe a little dispassionately, a little clinically, logically, and then they move on to maybe law enforcement. 15 minutes later, after a number of topics have come and gone, they may come back to the assault and discuss memories about the sequence of events and maybe what they were thinking at the time of the assault. Then they go on and talk about other topics. 5 minutes later, they may circle back around to it and discuss emotions they felt during the attack. So all of these bits are talking about the attack, the assault, but they're not happening at the same time in the interview. So what I do is take these sections that are separated by a lot of minutes, and I weave them together into one concise, focused account. the information that's in between those topics that I'm weaving together, I'll group them together in other parts of the podcast so they will weave together to create other topics that we'll listen to. All of this means that the editing of interviews is more extensive than it appears. And that's just simply to have an easily understandable account that is accurate yet concise. I don't edit to change the story. All I do is weave together these topics so that they make sense. Back to Rona's question. When you hear something that sounds a bit off when you're listening to an interview, like in the example she gave about money, it's usually because of the editing. It's my fault because probably what has happened is that the person I'm interviewing talked about money at many different times in our conversation. And I know when I interviewed Marie, we spoke for somewhere between an hour and a half and 2 hours. And I've probably cut out something that would have helped tie together those facts about money. I apologize for that because it did make sense as she was telling it to me. I just left out a sentence here somewhere that would help it make sense to you. The next question is, this is a personal one. Okay.
Do you ever wish that you had stayed married? Sometimes I do.
This was from an anonymous listener. Wow. Yeah. Yeah, let me tell you that this is not an unusual feeling. Yes, if I'm honest, there are times I wish I had stayed married. We're often married to people we love. And there are parts of relationships, even the abusive relationships, that are good. I miss the good. Everything changed once I divorced him. Divorce is not fun, but it's often necessary for safety, physical or emotional safety. But one of the messages I hope that many of you get is that we don't have control over the past. We work with what we can as best we can to keep moving forward. So do I wish it were different? Yes. I wish the violence had never happened, and I wished we could have stayed married and grown old together. Yeah. You know what? This just reminded me. Not long after my divorce, I saw a movie in the movie theater with my kids and my parents, and I was in tears throughout this movie. What was the sad, sad movie, you ask? The Disney movie Up. The first part of the movie, it's just a few opening scenes. It's not the main part of the movie. But that first part of the movie shows a love story about a boy and a girl who grew up together. They fell in love, married, and had this whole wonderful life together. Although there were sad times during that life. But they stayed together until the wife passed. All this in the first minutes of the film. And I was wrecked in that movie. I sobbed and sobbed. My mom was hugging me from one side. My dad had to go out and get napkins in the movie theater because I ran out of Kleenex. My son put his arm around me, and one daughter clambered over her brother to kiss my cheek. My youngest daughter awkwardly climbed into my lap to hold on to me. They thought I was sad that the woman in the movie had died. They didn't understand that what destroyed me was this blissful glimpse of the way marriage is supposed to be. And that's what I wanted with my whole heart. I wanted the happily ever after. I wanted the support and love each other to the end. But as much as that's what I wanted, it wasn't going to be my reality. So yeah, I wish it were different. And it makes sense if you do too. Next question. All right, we're moving out of the personal.
How long does it take to put together one episode?
It's all over the place on this one. If I'm working on a miniseries, I do a lot of the upfront research before I ever write the script. That means when I'm writing an episode, I have a lot of the important information in my head, so it's pretty quick. Maybe 10 hours. Once I record an episode, I do all the editing myself currently, although I'm dreaming about an editor for season 4. We'll see. Basically, it takes me between 4 to 6 minutes to edit 1 minute of audio. A 30-minute episode that you all hear takes me about 2 to 3 hours to edit. And that's fast. In the early days, it would take me 10 to 12 minutes to edit 1 minute of audio. So, I don't know. So let's see if we did the math on that. 10 minutes, and I'm not a math person, guys. A long time. Let's just say a long, long time in the beginning. It works now because I'm an empty nester. I work full time, so I don't have much time during the days to work on this, but I have evenings and I have weekends. It's harder on weekends where I'm doing stuff with family, but I can usually work it in. There does come a point, though, when I absolutely have to have a break because I need to have weekends to recharge. And that's where seasons come in. So we're ending season 3, and I'm going to enter into a time of R&R. And then when I'm refreshed, season 4 will be here. There's something incredibly enjoyable about putting together episodes. So I think it's time well spent, but it is a lot of time. The next question comes from Montserrat.
What is your favorite part of podcasting?
My favorite has to be the emails. The emails I get from you, my friends. I am absolutely blown away when you write me to tell me about something you heard on an episode that helped you. Or if you thank me for talking about particular issues, and I'm so glad to know that I'm doing some small little thing that has helped people. The last question comes from Hannah, and this is a political one. She asks,
did you know that the definition of domestic violence was just changed in the United States? What do you think?
Oh, this is interesting. I looked at all of the questions in advance, but I only needed to do research to answer this final one. I think that this question is based on a news story that Slate published a couple weeks ago. It was titled, "The Trump Administration Quietly Changed the Definition of Domestic Violence, and We Have No Idea What For." So that is not the best title I've ever seen written for a news article, but it does get your attention. What that particular news story gets correct is that the definition of domestic violence was changed on the Department of Justice's website for the Women Against Violence Office. It is true that it is a more narrow definition than used previously on the website, and the one that's being used now only refers to physical violence as being a part of the definition of domestic violence. What the article gets wrong, or maybe I should say what people interpret the article as saying, is that this is a new definition. It's actually not a new definition. It is one that has been around for a long time, a very long time. It's the definition of domestic violence that is found within the Violence Against Women Act. It is because of that act, the Violence Against Women Act, that this particular office in the Department of Justice was created. The previous definition that was on the website was one that was not in the Violence Against Women Act. So on one hand, it does make sense. Since this webpage is the particular webpage of the Department of Justice Violence Against Women Office, I can imagine someone noticing that the language on the act and the language on the website didn't match, and changing it so it did match. On the other hand, the original Violence Against Women Act was written in 1994, and our understanding, as well as research on domestic violence, has advanced beyond what was written more than 25 years ago. So I wish that change had not been made on the Department of Justice website, because this old definition is lacking. As a side note, as some of you know, the reauthorization of the Violence Against Women Act is stalled in Congress at the moment. This particular act has to be renewed every 5 years, and it was up about a year and a half ago to be reauthorized. It actually expired back in 2018, and was only renewed for a few months during the government shutdown that we had in the United States. Then that temporary renewal ended in February of 2019. A couple months after that, the House of Representatives passed their version of it in April 2019, but the Senate also has to pass a version of it in order for it to be renewed. And they have made no movement on doing this, as far as I can tell. According to NNEDA, which is the National Network to End Domestic Violence, federal funding is still being made available for domestic violence programs, but the future of that funding is uncertain without the renewal of the act. If this is important to you, please contact your member of Congress to let your opinion be known. It needs to be renewed. In the past, this has typically been a bipartisan supported bill. But right now, there seems to be a pretty big divide based on political party. I don't know why. I'm not a political commentator, but I wish they could come together to renew this bill. Let's take a quick break to hear from our sponsors, and then we'll reveal our case for next season. That reminds me. I was a bit surprised, but absolutely no one asked why we have advertising on the podcast. Thank you so much for understanding. Right now, the ad revenue pays for transcripts so I can organize the audio clips better. And if we continue to grow like we've been doing, I hope that it might allow me to hire an editor as well. All right, now is the time to reveal about our topic for next season. I asked people to write in and guess who the person was. And let me just tell you, the answers were all over the place. I thought I had given a lot of clues and it would maybe be even super obvious who the next season would be about. But in reading a number of the guesses, sadly, I think there are just too many missing women who fit the basic facts of this case. So there weren't that many who got it right. But thanks to all who wrote me, and I will have stickers going in the mail to all of those who guessed correctly. Oh, you know what? If you got the wrong answer, if you want to send me your address, I'd be happy to send everyone a sticker who had guessed. Our next season will bring some change to Targeted. While before we've always dealt with clear-cut cases of domestic violence, it's not going to be quite so straightforward. The answers aren't as obvious, but I think we still need to look at them and dig in and understand everything that we can. Next season, we will feature the story of Marcia Rader Brantley, who was a married woman in her early 50s living in Southeast Tennessee while pursuing her dream of being an author. I know a number of people who worked with Marcia over the years, and they have fond memories of her. One time, she rode a big old motorcycle into an indoor gym at a college event and took laps around that gym inside, amping up the crowd's excitement. I kind of wish I could have been there. Marcia loved camping in the Great Smoky Mountains of Tennessee. And she often spent weeks up there hiking, riding, enjoying the outdoors along with her three beloved dogs. She was active in pet rescue and she would foster animals and she volunteered at an animal shelter. Marcia kept a blog that she updated often. On May 9th, 2009, she wrote in the blog for the last time. Her final entry discusses a movie she had seen with her husband, and she signed off saying, "Brantley out." Remember those words, Brantley out. About the time she posted her last entry into the blog, Marcia's husband gave her a new phone, and before she could give her new phone number to very many people, Marcia quietly disappeared. Because Marcia didn't have children, and her parents had passed away, her friends didn't have her new phone number, and none of her family lived nearby. Because of all these things, no one can pinpoint when exactly she vanished. Her husband did not report her absence to the police. He told varying stories to friends and neighbors about her leaving him, or being on vacation in the mountains, or heading out west to be a missionary. For some, it seemed logical that Marcia might be out camping, that she had no cell service in the mountains, and was focusing on her writing. She had recently won second place in a literary competition with a short story, and she was determined to write more. It wasn't until months later that Marcia's neighbor and Marcia's hairdresser became suspicious enough to involve law enforcement. Although Marcia has never been found, her husband was arrested twice for her murder, only for the charges to be dismissed soon before the trials. Rumors persist in the community of domestic violence and coercive control in the relationship. I'm already working on Marcia's story and setting up interviews. I'm hoping for you to hear about Marcia from those who loved her most. Wouldn't it be a miracle if her case received enough attention that someone comes forward with information and we could find Marcia? Season 4 will be quite different than the other seasons we've had, and I hope that you'll respond well to it. I hope you'll join me in a few months for Season 4. It will be called Targeted, Brantley Out. Thanks so much for joining us at Targeted Podcast, True Crime, Domestic Violence. If you're interested in my sources or research, I include a bibliography on my website, www.targetedpodcast.com. If you want to support the show, please consider leaving a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts and writing a sentence or two about what you like. It helps other listeners to find us. If you have constructive criticism, I would like to hear it, but I'd appreciate an email about it. You can reach me at targetedpodcast@gmail.com. Targeted has a Facebook page and a Twitter account. Links to those will be in the show notes. We also have a Patreon account, which was recently revised so that you can gain early access to ad-free episodes for $1 each. If you want early access to all of the episodes in a month, it will be $4 most months, and there would be no expense for months when we do not have new episodes. Please stay tuned for the promos at the end of the podcast and check them out if they sound interesting. I'll include links to them in my show notes. As we end, let me emphasize that if you or someone you know is targeted by abuse, you are not alone. I've included some contact information in the show notes and on the website about a number of different organizations who can help. Leaving an abusive relationship can be one of the most dangerous times for a target, and I strongly encourage you to reach out for support. It may be the hardest thing you ever do, but it will be worth it. I'm Mo Blackwell, the host of Targeted. Peace, my friends. Peace.